Well, hello, everybody, and I don't know why I always want to start like Mrs. Doubtfire, but I figured it would be a good way to start today. Welcome into Gwen and Chris. I am Scraby, Matt Scraby here with you. Tony is going to be calling the game for TV starting at 3:40 p.m., so he will not be joining me for this quick get-together, as Chris Ello would say. Chris Ello on vacation. He'll be back in a couple weeks, but today we have so much to fit in into a very, very short show, so I'm not going to waste any time. I'm going to get right into it. Padres lose to the Astros in extras last night, and I don't really know about you, but I thought last night's game was really fun, even though that the Padres lost the game. I know that's not good, and I'll get into it in a second why it irked me a little bit doubly more, but the Padres last night went toe-to-toe with a legit AL team that some people think this is the preview to the World Series. The Astros have a really strong lineup. They have some of the best pitching around baseball. And the Padres, the last two nights, they have put themselves in a spot to win these games. I don't think you can ask for much more. And you had Michael King being great. You had Manny Machado tying it up with a huge home run. You have Fernando getting on base before that home run, stealing second. You have Josh Hader throwing a wild pitch to tie the game, by the way, with Jackson Merrill at the plate for a four-out save. He did not end up getting the save. He ultimately went on to get the win. But there were so many different storylines in last night's game. And again, unfortunately, that didn't result in a win. But it sure tells me what this team is all about. They are never down and out. And these last two games should encourage all of us about the resolve of this team heading into the playoffs. If you didn't watch the last two games and think, I like my chances in the playoffs, then you're not watching what I'm watching, because the Padres are absolutely as good as the Astros, and they've proven it the last two nights. Not only that, you have something that hasn't happened too many times this year with Profar, Fernando, and Manny all in the lineup together, but the last two nights you saw those three going 7-for-12 on Monday, and then last night they went 5-for-14, but two of those five hits included a Fernando single, followed by the Manny home run. So it really, you know, it's unfortunate for them that they weren't able to drive in some more runs, but if this team is capable of playing like this in the playoffs, then strap in, because they have confidence. I mean, I have confidence. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but I have confidence in this team, and I have more confidence than I ever have. And I know that Tony's been saying that as of late, and he's right. This team is showing us why we should be ultra confident in them. And, you know, if we're going to nitpick the game last night a little bit, you have certain things that you don't really want to see. Again, they went 2-for-7 last night with runners in scoring Monday night with runners in scoring position. Last night they went 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position. And although not great at all, the at-bats with runners in scoring position are there. And as we have said so many times on this show, it would be way more concerning to me if they didn't have the opportunities to drive in runs. If they never got a guy to second or had an at-bat with someone in scoring position. But they've had, here comes my math again, 16 chances in the last two games with runners in scoring position. And that's a lot, that's a number that you can deal with as long as they're driving guys in. Not only that, I mean, Adam, let's bring you in for a second. Do you feel like this team has more swag than the 2022 team? Do you feel like this team is, I'm not the coolest guy in the world, but they're harder than the 2022 team?
Swag's an interesting word. Obviously, you know, remember they had the swag chain and a bunch of stuff like that and a lot of the dances that they did. And I would file that stuff under swag, but perhaps not as much substance. And I feel like they definitely have a lot more substance this year.
Substance.
I've never been more confident and a bigger believer in a Padres team that I've covered since I've been here as much as I am this season.
Yeah, substance is a great word, because this team does have substance. And this team has, we talked about AJ Preller yesterday and how he put this team in a spot to succeed. And you can see why this team has been picked by many of the experts out there to go deep in the playoffs. And it's, The last night's game, let's go back to the end of the game. Let's start with last night's game at the end. Bottom of the 10th, and I knew once I saw this happening, this was going to be a topic on the show, but Tyler Wade is a ghost runner in the bottom of the 10th, and he moved to third on a wild pitch. So the team is down 1-4-3 in the bottom of the 10th. I'm at home thinking, all right, they're going to tie this up. They got a guy on third. They got a speedster on third with no outs. They're going to tie this up. And then eventually Diaz walks. So now you got runners on the corner, no outs. You have a rise up. This game's going to be tied, right? He hits a chopper up the middle. Tyler Wade held at third instead of trying to score. And immediately, TV broadcast was really good. I've heard both calls. And immediately a TV broadcast said, oh, he stayed. And I was thinking, should he have gone? And so then they showed a couple more angles and all that. And then Adam and I went over it before the show. And my ultimate verdict on this is that Tyler Wade had nowhere to go. And Tyler Wade and the team made the right decision to hold him at third. And he didn't even really have that good of a lead. His secondary lead was basically not even a secondary lead. So it wasn't a contact play. And let's go to Mike Schill. Let's hear from the manager, because he was asked after the game about that play and whether or not there was a contact play put on.
Did you think, I'm kind of blanking on who hit the ground ball, but it wasn't a contact play obviously there for Wade. What kind of went in?
Nobody out, no contact at that point. You know, he's reading the hop, it's a little tighter. You know, just didn't want to make the out at home with the first out, and you know, we got Toddy and Pro and Manny coming up.
I hate to say this after Mike Schill already said it, but yeah, you can't make the first out at home in the bottom of the 10th, because then you're almost hoping for a miracle at that point to tie the game up. But they held Tyler Wade, and those decisions are not easy decisions for the team, because obviously with the Dodgers losing to the Marlins, we'll get into that in just a second, but it's hard to make the right call sometimes. And Tyler Wade is extremely fast. We've also seen him dive under a tag before and smash his face into the ground to get the run. But if they send Tyler Wade there, he's out at home. And if he's not clearly out at home, it's a bang bang play at minimum, because he is that fast. But also the chopper wasn't high enough, and so they held Tyler Wade. Adam, what do you think about them, you know, not taking, because some people out there are saying they're not taking their opportunities to score. What were you thinking about this play last night?
Well, there's two separate plays, right? The play before that was the wild pitch. He didn't score on from third base. So he had two opportunities to score from third with zero outs, where two opportunities where he would have made the first out. He obviously did not have a very big leadoff or secondary lead, and I think that contributed to him not scoring on the pass ball. He broke a step or two towards home in the pass ball, and at that point, based on how small his leadoff was, probably made the correct call in not going home. But I think if he had a little bit more, I don't even want to say aggressive, but maybe normal secondary lead, I think he would have scored from home. Now, you know, it got away from him. Hector Neris didn't really break immediately to cover from home. The issue is that the top of the lineup is coming up, and at the time there were no outs. And it's almost like one of these things where you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, right? Like, if he had broken for home and thrown out at home with no outs on top of the lineup, he'd be getting criticized immensely today.
Yeah. And
rightfully so, right? It's one of those things where, like, we're all process over results oriented, but that's one where the results matter. And if you go home, you better make it. I thought he had a better chance to score on the pass ball than on the other one. And on the hit by Arise, I don't think it was a situation where the third base coach sends you or doesn't send you, because it's so in the moment.
It's kind of
you
a just have instinct to know. Play.
It's like Mike Schilt talked about. The contact play is either on or it's off. And he will either run as soon as contact is made. You wait and see if it gets through like it's a base hit. And so if he had broken for home on contact, he would have been out by a mile, I thought, on the Arise hit.
Yeah, thank you for bringing up the pass ball. I meant to mention that, but that is very important to mention that happened right before all of that. And DJ on the chat said he would have been gunned down and we'd have a different conversation asking why he went. And that's one of the things I love about this job and I love about sports, is that you can never win if you're the manager or if you're the team. But you're right. If there was a chance, it was the pass ball, because Tyler Wade probably could have snuck in there before. And then ultimately he's putting pressure on the defense to make a play. And if they're not going to, if you're going to put that pressure on him with Naris a little bit late covering home, you know, maybe they could have scored, and maybe that was the opportunity, but it wasn't. And then they did the right thing by holding him the next play with Arise hitting. And Tyler on the chat, if you want to watch on YouTube, you can just go to 97 or YouTube and search 97.3 The Fan. But Tyler said he where did it go? They had the right bats behind him, Arise, Toddy, Pro, Manny, coming up to get it done, but it just didn't happen for us.
And that affects how aggressive you are as well, where you are,
yes.
How many outs there are, who's due up, all of those
instances. If this was like the 7, 8, 9 hitters, I think we're talking about a way different situation. But you're right, when you have Arise up there already with two guys on and no outs, you're not going to take chances because you have the guys like Fernando, who has been hitting really well as of late, and Manny obviously is just on another planet at this moment. So
Profar's come through all season.
Profar is on the way back too. Again, they went 7 for 12 combined. Jerickson, Profar, Fernando, and Manny on Monday night. And last night they went 5 for 14. But I will say, two of those five hits were huge hits, which included Fernando's single and followed by a Manny home run. All right, so if we are going to complain about something, and this really did bother me and irk me, we're going to complain about the missed opportunity in the standings. And this loss, the Padres had enough time with the result of the Dodgers and Marlins, knowing that the Dodgers lost and knowing that there was ground to be gained. And they obviously put themselves in a position to win that game. But with the Dodgers losing to the Marlins, you cannot afford to lose that game. Now, the reason you can't afford to lose that game is because how many times are the Marlins going to beat the Dodgers here coming up in their series? I don't even know if their series is over soon. No, they played Atlanta on Monday, so I would have to check on that in the break. But you have to take advantage of that opportunity. And it hurts so much more because it was against the Marlins. You just don't have any idea what is going to happen with that team on a daily basis.
They've got two more games against the Marlins, one today, one tomorrow.
All right, there you go. So I would doubt the Marlins sweep them, but hey, the Dodgers have not been playing great as of late. And so that's why I think this missed opportunity is a bigger deal, because the Padres, what, a month and a half ago, were not even close to the top of the division. They've crawled their way all the way up into, I think, they're 3.5 games back right now of the Dodgers. You have to win that game last night. You absolutely have to win that game. But everything else, I mean, it's still a regular season game. The Padres are not eliminated. They're still leading the wild card way, and they still have a chance at the division. So these last two nights have been really fun. Padres are going to play today at 3:40 p.m. Sam Levitt, the EcoWater SoCal Padres pregame show at 2:40 today. So we're going to head to break because I still got some more stuff to talk about with you. And Michael King was awesome last night. There is, an argument for him going forward as to where he's going to pitch in the playoffs. And I'll give you my take when we get back here on Gwynn and Chris, 97.3 The Fan. All right, very quick show. Scraby with you here, Adam Klug on the board, helping me out here while Chris Ello is on vacation. Tony Gwynn Jr. getting set for the game today between the Astros and the Padres. The rubber match between the Astros and the Padres. And we went to break talking about Michael King and what Michael King is going to do coming up in the playoffs. But I want to answer this real quick. And it's from Rod. And Rod, I'm going to put this on the board right now. Rod says, Matt Scraby, what about the relief pitching decision? Why not bring in Estrada before Morejon? So I went and looked up the situation, and I could pretty much tell you I think it's pretty simple, and that would be because it was a lefty-lefty. Thing. It was Yordan Alvarez came up, and then it was Kyle Tucker right after that. Morejon's a lefty. The only other lefty in the bullpen, really, is Yuki Matsui, and I don't know that any of us were looking to see Yuki Matsui in that situation. But Morejon came in with the ghost runner. So Alvarez grounds out to first, Kessinger to third, then Tucker singles in Kessinger, which doesn't even count against Adrian Morejon's stats or anything like that, but it did put them in the lead, and it did bring up Diaz. He singled, and then that was when Estrada came in. But mainly, Adam and I were talking in the break. We think it was a lefty-lefty decision. Yordan Alvarez is one of the best hitters in baseball right now. If you're not familiar with his season-long stats, you should go look at them because he's hitting over 300. He has tons of power. And honestly, if Aaron Judge wasn't Aaron Judge, Yordan Alvarez might be a bigger star in all of Major League Baseball. So there you go, Rod. Thank you for asking the question. But Michael King. So Michael King has made a really, really good case for the playoff rotation, and I'm talking about in the wild card series. There's four pitchers that I could totally see the Padres using as starters in a wild card series. Yes, we're looking ahead, everybody. This is what we do right now, is look ahead to the wild card series. You got Dylan Cease, you got Yu Darvish, and you got Joe Musgrove. But you also have Michael King, who this year has been incredible for the Padres. The Padres, now let me get this stat out of the way first, because it's a negative stat that was brought to my attention, but I don't really feel like it's Michael King's fault. The Padres are 1-4 in the last five games that Michael King has started. So again, not really his fault. He's for the most part done what he's needed to do. And it was something else later in the game that ended up getting the loss for the Padres. But Michael King this year is tied for seventh best in ERA in baseball at 3.04. He's tied for sixth in Ks this season at 198. And this is a guy that came in. We were coming into the year in spring training talking about, oh, we hope Michael King is the pitcher that we want him to be. We hope Michael King can return on the trade for Juan Soto. Well, Michael King has done that and more. In the last, 15 games, he has a 2.52 ERA. He's thrown 85 innings, and he struck out 103 batters, only walking 26. His whip in the last 15 games is 1.17. Now, Ben and Woods were talking with Michael King yesterday, I believe. Yes, yesterday. And Michael King was asked about this. And so I wanted to bring that back to get his opinion on if he has been approached, or actually if he's been approached by the team pitching in the playoffs.
Yeah, none of it has been fully discussed. And of course, I mean, obviously I was a reliever the beginning part of my career. I obviously would love to start as many games as possible. I always joke to Ruben that I want to go 1-4-7 of the World Series. But yeah, whatever they need me to do in the playoffs, it's all hands on deck. So we're just going to win as many games as possible when it gets that, and throw whoever needs to be thrown.
And I love that about Michael King. He's willing to do whatever it takes to win. But I also think Michael King is subconsciously maybe is preparing for a role in the bullpen, because he brought it up. He said he's obviously pitched out of the bullpen in his career. But Michael King as a starter this year has been so good. And if you put him in the bullpen for the playoffs, think about that card that Mike Schilt can play during a game where it's tight down the, seven, eight, nine innings, and you need a guy to lock something down. You take Michael King out of the bullpen. He does his thing. He's already got experience coming out of the bullpen. There's so many good things that can happen with Michael King coming out of the bullpen or starting. But I know I say I think he's working his way into the rotation for the wild card, but I don't really think he has unseated those guys. Now, Adam, Yu Darvish, I guess I'm penciling him in already as one of the starters in a wild card series. Am I assuming too much, or do you think that that's probably what it's going to be?
I don't think you're assuming too much. I think you could make a valid case for any of the four guys starting any of the games that are pitched in the wild card round. I think, from my perspective, Yu Darvish was perhaps the most iffy of the guys, just because he missed so much time, and the first couple starts back, he was on a pitch count. But you see him in the last start, and you're like, okay, I think he might be back or close enough to full strength with a really strong bullpen. When you factor in the playoff experience that he's got, I'm sure that's valuable to a manager like Mike Schilt, that where between the lack of experience and the lack of starting experience in the playoffs, while combined with the experience coming out of the bullpen for Michael King, that you probably go with Cease, Musgrove, and Darvish in some order, with King perhaps missing out on a start in the first round. And look, maybe we just win the first two, and two of those guys miss out on starting in the wild card. But it's a really good problem to have all these starting pitchers that are high quality.
And it's not a demotion for Michael King to the bullpen. They only can start three guys maximum.
This is a somebody's got to miss turn. This is a whatever the team needs to win the games.
And if Michael King comes out of the bullpen and puts together a scoreless seventh and eighth inning, it's going to be all worth it, and it's going to be the right decision for them. The one concern that I have for Michael King is the big inning for the other team. And I think we've seen this kind of throughout his starts. He'll mow down lineups, and then he'll have that one sketchy inning. So, for example, last night, he gave up a hit, he gave up a walk, and then the second and third, and that was in the first inning. Then the second and third was clean. In the fourth, you saw a single, a flyout, another single, then a double, which scored Kyle Tucker, and a ground out and a line out to end the inning. But what I'm trying to illustrate here is that it snowballs, seemingly it snowballs fast when Michael King maybe has something not go his way right out the gate in the inning.
We saw it in the Korea series, where it's just two standalone games with plenty of time off after the second game. Michael King was brought in out of the bullpen, right, and used as a weapon. Now, obviously, he didn't pitch that well, but the point is that's how he was deployed. There's plenty of stats that back up the fact that for the relief pitchers. Now, the Padres obviously had the strongest bullpen in baseball right now, and like you invested and you traded a lot of prospects to get them, and you've got that 7-8-9 set up, but like, in a world where you get what you want and you go Adam Scott Suarez in a game one and win the game, you could then conceivably bring Michael King out of the bullpen in game two and pitch the sixth and the seventh or the seventh and the eighth fresh since his last start, not have to pitch two of your three high leverage relievers on back-to-back nights and minimize the opportunity for pitching poorly on a back-to-back, and then you've just got your closure on the ninth inning. Like, that sets up really well as a blueprint to win two games and then get some more rest and not have to play a third game.
Yeah, because, I mean, the first three games are played back-to-back-to-back, just like any sort of three-game series. So there's no days off in between, meaning they can't just go out there and use ASS part of the bullpen both or all three nights. It's just not going to happen. I mean, we've seen it before. You can't go three nights in a row.
They probably could do it two nights in a row, games
two nights for sure. Three nights is asking a lot.
But agreed, but my point is you might not even have to take the chance of poor performance on pitching on back-to-backs. If you pitched them in game one, you get that win. You could pitch Michael King for two innings in game two and he'd be fresh, and then just worry about the ninth inning essentially.
We are, the more we're talking about this, the more I'm convinced that I'm going to go tell Mike Schilt next time I see him that Michael King needs to come out of the bullpen. Because, I mean, how many times, we've talked to so many players this year. We've talked to a ton of pitchers this year during Friar Friday, and they always tell us that coming out of the bullpen is a completely different animal than starting a game. Starting a game, you warm up, you don't really know how long you're going to go, but when you're in the bullpen, you're coming into the game when it's at its most stressful.
Or if Yu Darvish isn't fully built back up, if Yu Darvish gave you five high quality innings, you could bring in Michael King to pitch this, let's say, or the sixth, seventh, and eighth, however he's going, pitch a couple innings out of the bullpen, and then just deal with the eighth and or the ninth. Almost like a piggyback situation.
Yeah, there's so many different ways this team could go in the playoffs. And yes, we're talking about the playoffs. If you're just tuning in, you're like, why is he talking about the playoffs? The Padres, I'm knocking on wood, but they are looking strong. They have three games. They have one game against the Astros today. They have three games against the White Sox coming up. And please, please, please win two of three from the White Sox. Win three
sweep.
Of three.
Sweep.
So you have to sweep. The White Sox are probably already have one foot in their suitcase ready for the offseason with like a week to go. Did you see that? Side note. Did you see that article that Jeff Passan put out about how he went and spent a day with the White Sox and he told everybody that they needed to keep their spirits up by having a sense of humor? And some guy wrote, seems like you went and you wrote about going to a prison, which it really does kind of seem like that. But anyway, the White Sox are a whole different story. They're coming to town on Friday. But there you go. There's the argument for Michael King, whether or not he should be in the rotation or whether or not he should be in the bullpen. And finally, before we get out of here, this is the last thing I'm going to say about Josh Hader and the Padres, my famous last words, because I'll probably say something next week. But Josh Hader comments, his comments post-game about the storybook-type setup he had with coming in for a four-out save and facing Jackson Merrill, and then ending up spiking or throwing a wild pitch on his first pitch of the at-bat after some disengagement type of argument. It was very strange, but here is what Josh Hader told the media after the game.
What was it like to pitch here, to come back and pitch in this ballpark and reception?
Yeah, I mean, I love this ballpark. I love pitching here. Obviously, I love the booze. Living rent-free is always a good time.
It was kind of ironic you got, we're called upon to get four outs here today.
Not so.
That laugh at the end is what gets me every time. It's like, like living rent free, bro. What? I don't understand that comment. But I thought a lot about this because they did on TV last night stay on the game for a little bit to see if Josh Hader was booed when he came out. And I was actually, after the pushback that I got, from, you know, people yesterday was, no, don't boo him. But most of the crowd booed him. Most of the crowd booed him. And, you know, I don't necessarily, I'm okay with you not liking the player, but I don't know that he deserved to be booed last night. And we talked about it a little bit yesterday, and Adam is disagreeing with me on this. But the reason I don't think he deserved to be booed is because in 2022, he was really good in that NLDS. And then in 2023, as we said yesterday, it was more of a, he got caught up in a really bad team and everybody was angry. And also the Brewers, he had baggage with the Brewers. I don't know that he deserved to be booed, but that is, Nate says, three radio shows in a row talking about how a former player is not living their head rent-free. They're not, because I said this is the last time I'm going to talk about Josh Hader and the Padres, but we have to comment on it. He's talking about the fan base. There's nothing. If I were to skip that, it would have been egregious, an egregious error on my part. And I won't be bringing this audio to you anymore, people. Come on. Come on. All right. We are headed towards Sammy Lev's Eco Water SoCal Padres pregame show here on 97.3 The Fan. He's going to get started at 2:40, and the game is going to get started at 3:40. So make sure you're here tomorrow, because we got a full show, a slate of shows on the station with the Padres off day. We also have a round table. Tony and I are going to be in studio tomorrow ahead of Thursday Night Football. So enjoy the game, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Thank you, Adam, for helping me out here today. And I will talk to you all tomorrow on 97.3 The Fan. Enjoy the game.